would tonight take your Bibles and turn first to Galatians chapter 4. I just want to look at a passage in Galatians 4 here, and then we'll move on from there, possibly come back. Something the Lord had given us several weeks ago, and even just in the morning hours here recently, just opened some things up to my thinking. I want to thank the Lord for that. And oh, I forgot. In evangelism, you're supposed to thank you. It's so good to see you all and all. Anyway, I'm glad that's over. You're probably more glad than I am. I've been told sometimes that, believe it or not, a guy told me recently that you're too serious sometimes when you preach. I said, you're the first person ever told me that one. But we are glad to be here. I mean that. We were sitting at home. We left here. We were in a couple of meetings in Pennsylvania. Then we went to Oklahoma. The day we went to the zoo was 74, a week before Thanksgiving. And then we got home for about a week from Oklahoma and went to coastal Carolina, South Carolina. And it was in the 70s there. As a matter of fact, now to them it's freezing cold. There's nobody on the beach. They didn't have parkas on. And we're out there digging holes in the sand and playing in the edge of the water. And they knew we weren't local. And so we really haven't dealt with the cold. I shoveled maybe 2 inches of snow this year. One time we made a snowman. He fell over and banged his head and died. And that day, and then he melted the next day, was gone. So we've had a very mild winter. And I had just told my wife that and got a text from your pastor, said, you know, won't you come up? And our mild winter shot now, thanks to Black Creek. But we've enjoyed being at home too. We've taken some rest. Some of you may have noticed Rebecca is lightly afflicted and not sleeping well. And Lord willing, in the next her due date, I guess, is what, about 33 days away. Those of you that have been there understand. And so we're not getting any sleep anymore. And I pick at her about, and I'm not going to say that, but I'll say something else. It's amazing how, you know, I just tell her, I say, honey, just because you're miserable doesn't mean I have to be. And those of you men who know, that's just not going to happen. You know, we can be up all night in misery and deal with it by ourselves. But she loves company. And so anyway, you did let me sleep last night. That is true. She snuck out last night, let me sleep. So no, she's just that place. Just pray for this week. You know, it's hard for her to travel. And so just do keep her in prayer. Galatians 4. And I started, let me just start, I guess, down here about probably verse 16. Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? They zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude you that you might affect them. But it's good to be zealously affected always in a good thing, and not only when I am present with you. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law? And he goes on, then he gives the allegory, of course, of Abraham having two sons. And the greatest of these, of course, was Isaac. And he is giving them an understanding that when you're going back to the law, those of you that want to return to the law, and he simply makes this statement in there. He says, I stand in doubt of you. So, as you look at this passage of Scripture, as I've looked at this, there's a couple things I want to just point out tonight before we move from this. But he said this in verse 19, my little children of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. I believe, and you can look at this differently if you have a better understanding. Of course, anybody that differs, I don't mind that. But I believe he's saying, listen, I'm calling you little children. I have heard you say that you were born. I've seen some things that you went through, said that you had been born of God, but he said, I'm travailing over you. And then he said this, I stand in doubt of you. In this particular case, the reason why, I believe, is he's saying because you're looking back to the law. You're trying to put others back under the law again. And he said, but I'm going to travail in you and travail over you, travail with you until Christ be formed in you. Now the question is, and one of the debates, I guess, is simply, is Christ formed in every believer? Christ, the hope of glory. Is he formed in every believer? Not perfectly, no. Why? Because of us. Yes, sir. But that which he which hath begun a good work in you, yes, sir, he will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. And that work has begun, that forming of Christ in us, trying to conform us to his image, is in every believer. So why is Paul telling them, little children, and then he says, and he goes on and says, until Christ be formed in you. He said, I don't see evidence. I don't see the proof. And he made this tremendous statement in verse 19. He said, of whom I travail in birth again. I had to go back to my holiness roots that I was raised in. Some of you understand that. And I could see the twisting of this verse. You must have done something, and now you have to be born again. You must have offended God and sinned, therefore you must not really be saved, or you've lost your salvation, and so you have to be born again one more time. Though Paul is saying, no, I stand in doubt of you, because the very idea that you want to be under the law and putting others back under the law puts me in. Now, I want to say this. You may doubt that Tim McVeigh is saved. That doesn't really faze me. I've been accused of a whole lot worse than that. You might say, I saw Tim McVeigh do this, 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 and this. I don't think Tim McVeigh is saved. Well, I like it with Howard Calvert, who's since with the Lord, but he was a pastor of Candlelight Baptist Church in Wynn, Arkansas for over 40 years. And he said this, he said, if you don't like something about me, he said, just make sure you take it up with the Lord.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Just take it up with the Lord. So am I offended because somebody says, you know, I stand in doubt of you, Tim McVeigh? No, it doesn't bother me one bit. Somebody says, Tim McVeigh, I think you're a low-down crook. Okay. I used to be, but I don't think I am anymore. And if I have done something to wrong you, then certainly I'll try to correct that wrong that has taken place. But I don't think I'm a low-down crook. If I've inadvertently maybe kept something that belonged to you, I've not willfully stolen that from you. I promise you that. And I'll be glad to either return it or make it right if you just let me know about that. But the Apostle Paul is saying this with unction. The Apostle Paul is saying this with authority. Apostle Paul is saying this with the Spirit of God. I stand in doubt of him. But this is what he said in the midst of all that. He said, travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. I want to look at that travailing. That suffering. That hurt. We don't see it today. Doctors have helped us, whether they be medical or mental. There's counselors for anything that causes us the slightest bit of angst. There's therapy and counselors and medications and everything else. We don't see the travail of the physical suffering like people used to. I know the doctor had told us at the birth of Lillian, I believe, they said something to the tune of, I think, over 90%, like 90 couple percent of women today, you know, just opt for the epidural. And the doctors actually prefer that. It's a whole lot easier on their nerves, I'm sure, as well as their physical being, when you don't have a woman screaming, clawing at your head. You're trying to deliver a baby. And I'm not being funny about that. It's funny, but I'm not being trying to be funny. And so we don't understand travail. We've learned how to block out pain. We've learned how to block out suffering. We've learned how to put suffering aside. It's been replaced, can I say, simply with pleasure. But Paul said, I'm travailing in you. And I want to look at that word travail. Let's go to the New Testament again, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. And just one more time, I want to look at his explanation as Brother Paul speaks to us here. In verse 9, he asked them simply, remember this about him. And can I say, would it be good of us if we could ask others, do you remember this of me? Our labor and travail. Would it not be good that we could remember that of one another? Would it not be good that the Black Creek Baptist Church would say, I remember the days of Tim McVeigh's labor, but also his travail over us. His travailing on our behalf. Literally going into the jaws of death in agony over us. Would that not be good to be remembered as such? For laboring night and day, because we would not be chargeable unto any of you. We preached unto you the gospel of God. And in that, you're witnesses in God also how holily and justly and unblameably we behaved ourselves among you that believe. We didn't come for your money. We didn't defraud you. We didn't curse you. We didn't lose our temper with you. We weren't dismissive of you. We didn't have respecters of persons among you. We labored and travailed over you. Why? Go back to Galatians, that Christ might be formed in you. We were unblameable. I'll be honest with you. I have to look back at my ministry. And it's those points when people can lay the blame at my feet and they're right about it that hurt. When they just lie, or they're just confused or dissembling, that's water off a duck's back. It's when they tell the truth that it really hurts. But Paul said we were unblameable. There was nothing more I could have done in your presence as I labored with you and as we labored over you day and night. There's nothing more I could have done. He said, you know and you remember our labor and our travail that we had in you. Why? Going back to Galatians, because we wanted to see Christ formed in you. Now imagine if I took the modern idea of that and went into evangelism. I would have a one-track message for sure. Encourage, serve God, encourage, serve God, encourage, serve God, encourage, serve God, go soul winning. That's the three basic veins. Listen, we have a Christian radio station by us, and my ears perk up when somebody's not preaching that. When somebody isn't preaching one of those three, I mean, every day, just message after message on how you need to serve God and how you need to just love the Lord and how you just need to be encouraged. And I know it's discouraging days and I know it's discouraging times. And I know it's discouraging moments and everything's discouraging. Oh, we just want to lift you up. Paul, what's the real problem? Oh, I stand in doubt of you. How encouraged can you be if you're lost? I'll say this, how much can you serve God if you're lost? got to put your heart into the ministry and your labors in the ministry, and you need to reach out to people. And I've had people say to me, I can't even reach myself, let alone others. But that's the general message I hear everywhere I go today, is be encouraged, witness, be a servant, serve God, witness, be encouraged, be encouraged, be encouraged, be encouraged. You know what Paul's message was? I travail over you. I'm broken over you. I'm crushed over you. You don't need encouragement. You need Christ formed in you. He carried a burden. And he willfully carried a burden. He didn't go to the apothecarist and get aloe juice and morphine and some type of a hodgepodge of elixir to put him to sleep at night. No, he labored day and night in the hopes that Christ would be formed. The labor's not all done in here. Can I say this? A lot of the labor's done down there. A lot of the labor's done in a secret place. A lot of labor's in the wee hours, the night or the morning, when God won't let you sleep. God lays that burden on you in the night hours, and he takes that sleep away for a purpose. You know, I'll just tell my own faults. It's not for YouTube. Sometimes I think that. Boy, it'd be a whole lot easier to watch some hockey fights than it would travailing in prayer over some of the folks at Black Creek. Boy, it'd be a whole lot easier just to, and you can just fill in the blank with your little, you know, your little things you like to do. It'd be so much easier to do this than it would to travail in the night hours in prayer over my children and over my family. If I could just ease that burden and lift that burden off my shoulders. God lays that burden on you, you ought to bear it. Genesis chapter 35. Verse 16 of Genesis 35. I'm starting verse 17. Verse 16, rather. And they journeyed from Bethel. There was a little way to come to Ephrath, and Rachel travailed. And then he tells us this, and she had hard labor. How hard? Well, it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said unto her, fear not, thou shalt have this son also. And it came to pass as her soul was in departing. I'd call that travail. They still use the term, or I still hear it not often, but the old timers would use that term. That lady in the travail going into the jaws of death is what they said where I grew up. She going to the jaws of death to deliver that child. And by the way, without modern medicine, some of you ladies wouldn't be here. Some of your children wouldn't be here. It's just a fact. My wife and I personally know a lady in the travail of birth and in hard labor, her heart stopped. Mrs. Gearhart knows her. Dear friends of our family. Her little girl, I believe, lived 15 days just through the miracles of modern medicine as she held her in her arms until she died. That's with modern medicine. Why? She's in the travail of birth, the hard labor of birth. And in doing so, her soul departed. We see that in birth. We see the travail of birth. And can I say the awfulness of that travail? But can I say on the other side of that travail, there is joy? That weeping endures for the night. We know that. And by the way, that night is not defined in a 24-hour window or in just the darkness of night. A nighttime can be a long time for some. But joy cometh in the morning. And I sat in that hospital room for the birth of our first baby. And I saw the travailing, I saw the angst, and I know when they because of medical things, and they had to charge us extra money because we had good insurance, so they're doing everything they can, and they finally just said, well, we got to give you something to, you know, speed this up a little bit, and they induced labor, and my wife just began to climb the bed. And I went to Hardee's, got a burger. No, I didn't really know. She's in travail. It's a suffering, it's an angst, there's an awfulness to it. Our second example I want you to look at with me is in chapter 38 of Genesis, verse 27. It came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And it came to pass, he drew back his hand, and behold, his brother came out. And she said, how has this broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Therefore, his name was called Phares. She's in the time of travail. She's in a place of suffering. She's in a place of angst. She's in a place of absolute agony. But through that, there is also joy. I've heard your pastor many times as he speaks on that, of the angst of the birth and how that mother suffers, but the second that baby breaks forth, it's all forgotten. And I know, I don't want to be too vivid or graphic, I try to be really careful, but, you know, my wife's just holding that little baby, and the doctor's hasn't even close to being finished. I didn't realize the horrible, awful things that, you know, I thought would have a baby and go home. I didn't realize there's all this other terrible stuff that, you know, accompanied having this baby. And my wife's oblivious to every bit of it. She has no clue. You know why? Because there's joy in holding that baby. Her travail is past. I don't think she's looking forward to the travail of the second one. Those of you that have more than one child, I don't. You know, you really can't fully understand, ladies, I'm sure, until the first one's born. Then all of a sudden, you understand the travail, and you don't look forward to it the second time. The doctor made the statement to Rebecca at one point and said, you know, she goes, a lot of women don't want the epidural. She said, it's about a couple hours into labor. The travail, the angst, the sorrow, the hurt. We see it again in the scriptures. If you'll turn to 1 Samuel chapter 4. In verse 19, of course, Eli's sons, rather, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women that stood by said unto her, fear not, for thou hast borne a son. But she answered not, neither did she regard it. Why? She travailed unto death in bringing forth this child. And the Lord says, Isaiah 53, when he saw the travail of his soul, he was satisfied. When he saw the travail of the soul of Jesus Christ, it satisfied the Lord. When he saw the suffering, the angst of his soul. When he saw that as he was made sin for us. His soul was made an offering for sin. The Lord was satisfied with that. But it took the travail of his soul. And by the way, if we suffer with him now, we'll also reign with him. So why would we suffer that travail? Why will we not travail? I think we just learned how to put the hurt aside. Can I say this? We've all been hurt in life. Your degree of hurt, and listen, some of you have stories in here that just have shook me to the core. Things I never experienced. And I tell things that seem so commonplace to me, and I watch as it just shakes people to the core, the awfulness of the things they think I went through. But it seems like just a small, you know why? I've learned how to just block that out. Yeah. I've learned how to just push that aside. I've learned how mentally to just escape the reality of the things I've had to go through in this life. And I think we've done that so often that we just learn how to take the hurt and the pain, and we just learn how to push it aside. I think a lot of people do that with conviction. They've hurt so long and hurt so bad and hurt so deep. When God hurts them, they learn how to push it aside.
That's right.
Learn how to just ignore it.
Yes, sir.
I remember standing as a 16-year-old boy. Y'all heard me tell it often. White knuckle in the pew. God trying to show me what I was. But the hurt, even at 16 years old, the hurt of my past and the hurt of my life, I learned how to just shove everything aside and try to block everything out and run from the travail which ought to have been in my own soul, and I try to hide from it. The little evangelist looking down at me says, "Son, you can hold on to that pew. God's still trying to get a hold of you." I folded my arms. He'd say, "Son, you can fold your arms. God's trying to get a hold of you." Put my arms behind my back. "Son, God sees your arms behind your back." You know what that was? That was the travail of my soul. God gave me that travail. God put that travail on me. He hurt me to help me. He wounded me to make me better. But just like as Paul is saying, he's travailing over them. Just like we've learned how to push that off about people. You know, the easiest way to do that, by the way, is just to dismiss the person completely. Write off why they're such a terrible person. I've told you all the thing. I picked my wife up. I haven't done it in a long time. You know, because she hasn't done it in a long time, I register. But, you know, she'd make a comment about somebody, and I'd just snidely say, "Well, go give him a track, honey." And I wouldn't say it verbally, but I'd be thinking it. "Look at that silly person with the bone in their eyelids." I wouldn't say it, but I'd think it. Dismiss them. Write them off. Push them out. Not carry the travail of them. Not labor over them. Not hurt for them. Just dismiss them. Had Christ done that for us, we'd all be damned. When his soul travailed over me, had he looked and looked at Tim McVeigh and said, "You know what? This guy's an idiot," I'd have no hope. But he tasted death for every man. He didn't just taste death for just good people and common people and nice people. He tasted death for every man. He tasted death for this idiot. Mm-hmm. "Your pastor, I haven't got there spiritually yet. I refuse to call myself a fool. But I've heard your pastor say, I was a fool. And I always say amen. Yeah. I was a fool. But yet he was in travail over me. His soul was made an offering for me. He was crushed because of me. You say, when was he crushed? That perfume. It's made small beaten, crushed for me. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and the stripes we are healed. Why? All we like sheep have gone astray. He not only hurt for me, but he bore that for all of us. He bore that for the sins of the whole world. Ecclesiastes explains a little bit of that. Let's go back there just quickly. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. In verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. But I want you to notice this. He gave his heart to it. Not his mind, his heart. To seek out, to search. And this is what he said. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. He said, God gave that to me. But then he said, to be exercised therewith. God gave it to me with a purpose. And by the way, can I say this? He gave it to me because he knows that I can accomplish that. That's why you would exercise it. It's more than putting it into practice. There's a discipline involved in exercise, but it's more than just the practice of it. It's putting it into practice as a daily part of your life. But it's a travail, he said. It's not easy. It hurts. There's nothing simple about it. And secondly, in Ecclesiastes, the preacher in chapter 2 and verse 23 says this. Let me start in verse 22. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. In verse 26 says, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Confucius say, a fool and his money are soon departed. Confucius say. The preacher says, the wicked laid up store to give to the good man. The preacher says that it's a vexation, not only a vexation to him, but it's a travail to him. Why? To gather and to heap up that he may give. He can't figure out why there's nothing left. I work, I labor. I sweat, I labor, I work, and I have nothing. I have nothing left. And can I say this? I remember those days. I'm telling Pastor Vernon in case he's listening. It won't be now, it'll be a couple days. He'll probably listen. He told me when he was down in Lawton, Florida, he made a statement. He got up in the pulpit, he said to the boys, I believe it was in the pulpit, he said to the boys in the church, he said, boys, there's money to be made out there. He said, the reason you're broke all the time is you don't want to work. He said, there's money, go out and make money. He said, boy, I regretted that. He said, Lord, let me go flat broke. He said, I couldn't make money for anything. Come on now, help me out. If you just work hard, right? If you just work hard, you know one of the things that's bothered people about me, my wife, for years? I don't know how many family members say, go get a job. And I just say, I can't. I mean, they get angry. They get furious with me. I've had lost people just confront me about that. You don't even work. Are we doing okay? Anybody choking on that? You don't even work. You don't even work, Maury. Go get a job, Maury. My God shall supply all your need. You see, that's a vexation to people. Why? Because they think that their labor is going to amount to something. But he said, "Well, not give him this travail." A man goes out there and works for the sweat of his face. He's out there laboring. He's out there working. At the end of the day, what does he have to show for it? Nothing. Nothing. You know what the verse says? If you don't provide for your own. Where does provision come from? Somebody stand and tell me it's hard work, please. No, it comes from above. If I could just make more money, if I could just make more money, boy, if I just had a little bit more, and I've said many times, you would just spend more.
Yes, sir.
I had a man pick me up the other day to take me to lunch at a church in a Jaguar, brand new Jaguar. He's my friend, especially now. And of course, I'm just dogging him. I'm like, brother, this thing got lumbar support? You know, I'm just... I'll tell you who he was later. Yeah. You know. Like, brother, I ain't got no leg room in this. I had to seat the whole way up. But this thing has no leg room. Like, that seat goes back. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Back there messing with you, you know. Just dogging about that. I didn't bother me. He had a Jaguar. You know why? He had the money to buy a Jaguar.
Yes, sir.
I've had the money to buy a Jaguar before. But I didn't buy one. I'm not boasting. Put it in the ministry. He said it's a travail to man. He doesn't even know it. Stunning time to be personal. Why are people alarming rates across the country suicide? Alarming rates. Why? Because of this. It's a travail to them. It puts such pressure on them. Even psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers that study and work with people, Billings, Montana, Missoula, Montana, places like that, alarming suicide rates, small town America. I mean, who doesn't want to live in Montana? I want to live in Montana in the summer. I'm just being honest with you. The land of the big sky, you go, there's nothing but sky there. It's beautiful, it's marvelous, it's a wonderful place. They're killing themselves at alarming rates. Why? Is travailing.
Yes, sir.
They're in agony. They're suffering. And they think the only way out is to end their life. A lady will take pills. She'll cut her wrists. A man will either hang himself or put a gun in his mouth. For the most part. It's not 100%, but for the most part. Why? Because they hurt so bad they think there's no other way out. But you know what the preacher said? God put that travail on them. It's not to drive them to the grave. It's not to turn them to the grave. It's to turn them to Him.
Yes, sir.
That they could seek Him and search Him out all the days of His life. But you guys, most people get in that condition. They have no thought of God. If they do have a thought of God, it's maybe they had a religious upbringing and they think, if I do this, I might go to hell. But there's no thought of God. It's affected most of us. I've had family members, not immediate, distant family members. I've known clergy. I've known Baptist preachers. It took their life. Why? They could not bear the travail that was upon them. And I want to say this, church. I mean, I'm in the territory now I'm just going to probably get to Brother John, let him get me out of it. Not being funny. But God gave us that to bear. And if he gave us that to bear, can I say he can make a way for us to bear it? Christian, have you ever just looked into heaven, I can't take it anymore? You don't have to say it out loud, but have you ever done it?
Oh, yeah.
How much more of this can I take? I'd say, unless you took as much as he did, it's really not that bad. But why shouldn't we be afflicted? My ramblings tonight have been wrought out of a soul that's been wrung out in the last 3-4 months. The McVeighs have been wrung out. When I finally got down to the bottom of the barrel, I found out that you can get a little deeper. About 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 weeks ago, I woke up at 1:30, and the Lord laid Isaiah 53 on my heart. The 3 times we see the soul of Jesus Christ in Isaiah 53. He said, I want you to preach this. And the travail of his soul was just a small snippet of what God had given me. About 4 o'clock in the morning, I finally said, Lord, you've laid this on it. You just help me to bear it. You've given this to the McVeighs. You just help us get through it. So I walked in the house of God on Sunday morning with a King James Bible, busted up back, taking Tylenol 500s as often as I could without destroying my kidneys. Laid across the top of the pulpit because I couldn't stand up straight. And I preached the travail of his soul. His soul made an offering for sin. And I realized that day that I had pushed aside so often people that I should have been travailing over. May God have mercy. Paul said, I've travailed in you. We labor, you know our labor and our travail. Paul said, I've suffered for your sake. Now you hate me because I tell you the truth? All this I've done, and you hate me and I tell you the truth? The sleepless nights, day and night. The hours of prayer. Being blameless. You know what that blameless, and it has a connotation there. Taking no pleasure amongst you. Blameless. He didn't take a break and go water skiing. I'm just being honest. He didn't take a few days off to go to the mountains to get some relief, get some rest. It was blameless. Unblameable. Day and night, he said, I stayed there and I labored, I travailed over you. Why? Because I stand in doubt of you. I want to see Christ formed in you. As we travel, my wife and I travel. I used to think there were 3 or 4 different kinds of churches. By that I mean just a kind of a mindset concerning this thing of salvation. I finally learned there's 2 types of churches. One demands that people evidence the new birth through a new life. And then there's the rest of them. And can I say to you, the churches that demand the evidence of a new birth through a new life are slim pickings.
Yes,
and I go to churches and everybody's saved, everybody loves the Lord. I mean, people, you know, swapping spouses and secretly drinking liquor and get the front name in the front page of the paper. I'm telling true stories now. Been arrested for attempted kidnapping a youth pastor, arrested for indecent exposure, solicitation of a prostitute, divorces, bailing their children out of prison. Pastor's son burnt down the local Hardee's, was charged with arson, and somehow the technicality went free. Destroyed his life because of it. They should have put him in jail. And story after story after story. You know what it boils down to? Nobody stood in doubt of him. Because nobody wanted to travail over their soul. May the Lord help us. Pastor, ask with them what you want to do.
Pastor Hayden, close the service. 8 o'clock.